WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Ilse von Heimberg, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, giving back one card at a time, Titanic sails its ship of dreams to Chicago, and a beginner's guide to Bellegarde. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Northwestern's new Sigma chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, Incorporated is back on campus and it's making a difference one card at a time. WNUR's Cara Totley has more on its first service event since reactivating last winter.
On Friday, April 25th, stepping into Northwestern's Black House meant being welcomed by the sounds of 70s R&B and the presence of the finer women of the new Sigma chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, Incorporated, as they hosted their first service event since reactivating on campus this March.
My name is Glorietta Arturo. I'm a third year in Weinberg, and I am president of the new Sigma chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, Incorporated at Northwestern.
How did this event come to be?
This event came to be through our lovely soror, Ava. She already had all the supplies and everything, and it was a simple event.
I'm Ava Wade Curry, and I am the vice president of the new Sigma chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, Incorporated at Northwestern University. This is our first service event that we've done so far. We didn't know what we wanted to do because we don't have a lot of funding yet because we just started. So it was hard to do a bake sale or something like that. We kind of just wanted to do something simple because we all have really busy schedules. So something where people could just drop in and do something.
And so the new Sigma card making event was born. From 1 to 5 p.m., visitors could stop by the Quibbler Room in the Black House to create cards for a nonprofit organization called Cards for Hospitalized Kids, which distributes handmade cards to children's hospitals and Ronald McDonald houses across all 50 states.
I've held a card making event before for my fencing team, so I already had all the stuff. So I was like, we should do card making, and it's really simple and really easy, and then people can just come in and draw, and it's a bunch of fun if you're a creative person.
With the idea in place, the next step was getting the word out.
We promoted the event through GroupMe and through our Instagrams and our personals as well.
Which caught the attention of Medill sophomore Tiffany Jackson Felician.
I found out about this event through the Zeta Instagram, and I was just scrolling through my Instagram feed, and I saw it, and I was like, this is really interesting.
Much to the organizer's surprise, the event drew a strong turnout.
I actually wasn't expecting anyone to come, so I'm really happy that people came and are, making cards and, making a bunch of cards, too.
Honestly, because of the weather, I was not expecting the turnout that we got. People came here in, the pouring rain, and when they came, they stayed for a long time and made so many cards, so I'm so happy for everyone that came.
But the rain couldn't keep Jackson Felician from an opportunity to give back.
I decided to come because this is actually something very similar I used to do in high school. So we used to make cards for hospitalized kids all the time. And also it's just really good community service, which I love to do.
Beyond just giving back, the event also offered the chance to build new connections.
Frankly, this is my third time in the Black House. So I actually am meeting a lot of people today. But yeah, it's fun to come together with people, especially when it's kind of crummy outside and do stuff with friends or make new friends.
Still, community service remained the heart of the event.
Doing good in the world is always amazing. And for this organization specifically, they post the kids getting the cards on their Instagram. So imagine you can see your a kid holding your card that you made and smiling with a really big smile.
The chapter plans to continue hosting service events in the future.
We'll be doing a lot more service events, collaborating with a lot of the Northwestern community coming up. So just come and show up and support the community.
For WNUR News, I'm Cara Totley.
Titanic, the off-Broadway smash hit that parodies the James Cameron film Titanic with a heaping helping of Celine Dion, makes its regional debut in Chicago. Sophia Kesa has the story.
Some high schoolers spend their time playing football, being in the school play, or serving on student council. Chicago actress Abby C. Smith was a bit different.
I saw Titanic 4 times when I was in high school. It was just a thing to do, Me and my friends would be we have nothing to do on this beautiful summer day. Let's go see Titanic.
Now, more than 25 years later, Smith finds herself living the epic tale 8 shows a week. Well, not exactly. Smith plays the famously unsinkable Molly Brown in Chicago's production of Titanic, the off-Broadway smash hit that is part parody, part pop concert, and part Broadway glitz. Here's Michael Weber, the resident director of Titanic.
Well, Titanic is a sort of a celebration and a satire of the James Cameron movie Titanic. But it is being presented as seen through the sort of cuckoo crazy eyes of Celine Dion and using the Celine Dion musical catalog with the idea that Celine feels that she was actually on the Titanic and maybe she has something personally to do with the story of Rose and Jack. And she takes us through the story of Titanic from her point of view, in the sort of familiar milieu of a Celine Dion Vegas concert.
Not only does the story bring along the well-loved tale of Rose and Jack, but also another huge point of attraction is the angle of adding not only Dion as the madcap narrator, but also utilizing her songbook. For the show's music director, Dr. Michael McBride, that was a big selling point in joining the production.
I was really drawn to this score, of course, having experienced a broad variety of different kinds of theater, from classic to contemporary and experimental and avant-garde, but I was really interested in working with this music that was so near and dear to my own musical upbringing, and I think bringing it to the next generation is very exciting.
Coming from humble roots as a small show in the basement of a grocery store, Titanic clawed its way to the mainstream with a 3-year off-Broadway run and productions sprouting up in London, Sydney, Toronto, and Paris. But it had yet to find itself with a regional production in the U.S., until they began having conversations with Broadway in Chicago and Chicago company Porchlight Music Theater. Besides serving as the show's resident director, Weber is also the artistic director of Porchlight.
So what makes this unique is that the show in Chicago was built by Chicago artists, with Chicago actors, Chicago musicians, Chicago designers, and we did bring in the original director and writer of the show, Ty Blue, to come to Chicago and work with all of our local talents to put up the first
This led to a show with new sets, lights, and a bit more Broadway glitz, all done by Chicago talent. However, this fabulousness for such a larger-than-life show has to extend beyond the design elements and to the actors as well.
So it was a tall order when it came to casting in terms of finding people who could sing their faces off, but also were hilariously funny in this sort of Saturday Night Live, Brent Citizens Brigade, I.O. kind of way.
But the Titanic Chicago team were able to find people that more than delivered. Here's Smith again.
A lot of my favorite moments are just watching my fellow actors be hilarious, and they're so good at it. I mean, every night I listen to Rob Lindley do his speech because it's a little different every night, and sometimes he'll throw something in there that's just super funny.
McBride shares Smith's sentiments on one of the many standout moments of the show.
It's actually one of the moments that I'm not playing for. In the middle of the show, there is one of the most hysterical monologues from one of the characters that changes a little bit each night. It's quasi-improv. It's very interactive, and it's kind of like a jukebox of queer culture.
There's a section that I just call Ruth is like a big gay jukebox, where I just kind of get to launch into very famous monologues. Well, probably famous to middle-aged gay men.
That's Rob Lindley, who plays Ruth DeWitt Buckner, the stern mother of Rose, and also the show's big gay jukebox.
They have moments where they say, and right here, when she says, mother, it's not fair, you say fair, and then list three things that you think are not fair. And so that's where I can, you know, add in Katy Perry going to space and calling it feminism. That's not fair.
However, Lindley points out that this moment is one of the few actual instances of improv in the show.
I would say a lot of people think our show is more improvised than it actually is. They have written such a brilliant show with so many jokes per seconds, it feels like, just relentless jokes. And it's our job to make them seem like we are making them up at right there in the moment.
But for Lindley, his love for the show doesn't just only come from the humor.
Is that I love that it's unapologetically queer. It's not trying to hide the fact that it has a lot of gay references in it and a lot of gay culture in it. And as an out gay man, that makes me really happy that queer people can continue to be agents of entertainment and joy and add a little sparkle to the world.
So whether it be the humor, the iconicness of Celine Dion, the affection for Cameron's Titanic, or simply a love for Chicago theater, Titanic is a show bound to delight audiences.
It's a joy bomb, and it's a joy balm, and we need joy right now. It's a lot of laughter and a lot of happiness and a lot of silliness and a lot of goofiness, and we are living in a world right now that is awfully dark at times. And so this is an invitation to sit in the dark with 700 other people for a little over 90 minutes and just have joy.
Titanic runs from now until July 13th at Chicago's Broadway Playhouse. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Kesa.
If you've ever wanted a combination of full contact sports with Lord of the Rings roleplay and historical martial arts, look no further than Norris South Lawn. Reporter Mika Ellison has the story on Northwestern's Bellegarth Medieval Combat Society.
All right, weapons up. Lay out.
That was the sound of Bellegarth Medieval Combat Society. At this moment, they're doing a practice exercise with three club members against three others. Every time one of them dies or loses two limbs, they switch to the other side.
Are you dead? Yeah, I'm dead.
But let's back up for a second. They're not actually dying or losing limbs. And that thwacking sound you're hearing is the sound of foam weapons, called boffers. Here's club member and graduate student Sophia Boxenbaum explaining the rules.
So the basic rules are very straightforward in that you have a sword, you hit someone with a sword, and then depending on where you are hit, certain things happen, and that is kind of most of the rules. If you are hit in an arm, you lose your arm. If you're hit in a leg, you lose your leg. And then if you're hit in the torso, you die. If you lose two limbs, you also die.
Northwestern staff member Tony Smith is the club's advisor.
I've been fighting for over 10 years. I guess my claim to fame is this past fall. I was actually the head, referee. I was in charge of running the big fights at a 1,000-plus event this last year.
Like many current club members, he first encountered Bellegarth at university.
I started in 2015 at my freshman orientation in college, at Columbia College.
Bellegarth started at Northwestern this year, due in part to Smith's efforts.
I got us a slot at Norris at night to just let people try it in general and then collected names of interested students and then coerced them into starting an org and doing all the work themselves.
The club, which started officially this winter quarter, used to practice on Deering Meadow, a central location on campus. But they've since moved. According to club president, sophomore Henry Fleck.
Deering is also just so big that, especially in a sword fight, you find that you can just run away. It's a different option, yeah.
Bellegarth may be new to Northwestern, but it comes from a much bigger world of combat-based, role-play-ish sports.
This sport exists outside of colleges as well. It's an organization that for adults in Chicago that encompasses clubs. By the rule of the LLC of the sport, can take up a 20-mile radius. So there's a club that controls, like, all of Chicagoland.
Its original inspiration is Lord of the Rings-style fighting, albeit with sports rules and foam and duct tape weapons. The original Bellegarth club is called Numenor, and Bellegarth itself is supposedly an elvish word. But, Smith pointed out, people come to Bellegarth for a huge variety of reasons.
Different people take it for different reasons. So, like, I take it pretty seriously. I fight in tournaments. Like, I don't roleplay at all. But when you go to the large events that exist out there, there are many events out there with, like, 1,000-plus attendees where people camp out for a week.
Whoa.
There are people that just, like, dress up like a goblin and pretend like they're a goblin the whole week. And then there's just me, who is, like, jotting in my journal different, like, skilled sword fighters that I want to just, like, meet.
Smith mentioned those huge gatherings of people and found a video online. They look like a massive gathering in a field of fantasy time travelers. It's like a Renaissance fair exploded and then armed itself.
Well, the most popular style that's getting these days is you have the main field fighting, which you can have, like, literally 1,000 people going at it at the same time on two teams. And there's, like, different scenarios and stuff, and it's just crazy. And then there's the tournaments, which are, like, officially managed. There's different categories. So you have 1v1, you have 3v3s, 5v5s, with the different weapon types, because we have more than just swords. And then what's being fondly referred to as knight fighting, because it only happens at night.
Belagarth isn't just a sword thing, as you can probably tell. Weapons are color-coded. Blue is a typical single-handed sword, and red is anything that takes two hands to hold, including weapons like pole arms, spears, claymores, and larger swords. You can fight with shields as well. There are also more idiosyncratic weapons, like arrows with blunted tips and...
And I know ranged things as well. Bows, yeah, rocks.
Yeah, rocks.
Rocks.
Not real rocks.
Rocks are basically any round, soft object, from squishmallows to beanbag chairs. Smith emphasized that although Belagarth can have an overwhelming amount of rules and structure, it was created for people to have fun.
At the end of the day, I do just refer to it as wacky bats, though.
Wacky bats?
Okay. Yeah, because, like, that's all it needs to be at the end of the day. A lot of people can take it too seriously.
But you're just kind of having fun.
It's supposed to be recreational.
Yeah, that variety in approach is reflected in some of the club's members.
Jake Houston, I'm a freshman. And how I got into this, I went to the Norris at Night thing, and they had this thing where it was, like, a group of, like, three people versus three people, and, like, my group stayed in for, like, five rounds. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm good at this. Uh-huh. I joined. Turns out I'm not good at this, but I want to get good at this. So, you know.
Okay.
I also like Star Wars, so that was a big draw.
Senior Jesse Shefflin was walking with Baxenbaum on Deering Meadow when they both saw Belagarth. After one practice, she was hooked.
I thought it was super fun to sword fight. I like that it's a full contact sport, which is a fun fact, I guess, but it's definitely fun, like, when you're on the grass, you can shield bash people and, like, grapple, and we don't really do a lot of that in here, but I thought it was super fun, and I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I've read, like, the Silmarillion.
Oh, wow.
So it's relatable because they use a lot of swords there, where it might not be historically accurate, so it's fun. Like, for a while, I memorized the Aragorn today is not that day speech, and so that's kind of what I feel like in here.
Baxenbaum likened the club style of sword fighting to a video game.
It's most like playing Super Smash Bros. Or something, mm-hmm. other fighting games, where there's like a level of technical skill, and like timing and ranging are all relevant, and there's also quite a bit of mind games at play, and that part is super fun.
Belagarth has its roots in Lord of the Rings, but it can also function as an affordable alternative to those who are interested in historical European martial arts. Or HEMA.
The problem with HEMA is that it's very, very expensive because you need steel swords, usually armor, and it's just a very prohibitive cost barrier. So Belagarth was created a number of years ago, I forget the specific number, U of I, actually, because there were some students who wanted to do HEMA, but they decided to come up with a cheaper, safer alternative. So that's Belagarth.
In Chicagoland, places like Forteza Fitness offer classes in HEMA. There's also a whole host of other sword fighting sports. Jugger, which is kind of like capture the flag with swords, and Dagger Here, a role-playing game with full-contact sword fighting, are a couple examples. Belagarth is part of a large family of what Smith would call wacky bat games, an amalgamation of people who come from historical martial arts, Lord of the Rings, and even Star Wars. It's admittedly a little nerdy, but most of all, it's fun.
You see people doing Belagarth out in Deering or on Norris Lawn. It's going to turn your head, maybe, but it's sort of a little off-putting, which I get, you know, so it's a weird thing to be doing. Although I do think that's the fun part of it.
Fleck told me that his favorite part of Belagarth was that it can really become whatever you want it to be.
It does make it a little confusing to explain in a context like this, but that's also kind of the beauty of it, because I think even within our own small club here, we've got some members who are more interested in sort of the Lord of the Rings and the lore of all of it, and some members who are more interested in the history and sort of connecting it to HEMA if they can, and then other people who just, you know, want to run around and fight. We'll accept anyone.
So next time you see people hitting each other with foam swords on Norris South Lawn, consider joining in on the fun. For WNR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
Spring is a season of growth and renewal, and that goes hand in hand with poetry about the beauty of life. Mongzen Marklin brings us two poems that highlight the importance of finding the extraordinary in everything, even the seemingly mundane.
Hi. Have you taken a deep breath today? Welcome to Well-Versed, WNUR News' poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. Spring is in full swing and change is in the air. The rains, the smell of mulch, the feeling of regrowth and rebirth that emerges with the sun after the cold winter. In times like these, I always feel so much more aware of the wonderful ways that life continues to surprise us, especially in appreciating the little things. Today, I will be sharing some poems that hopefully capture this feeling of quiet moments and everything that makes life special. These two poems remind me to appreciate the highs and lows of life, the beauty, heartbreak, and mundanity of our everyday existence. I hope you enjoy. The first poem I'll be reading today is titled Watching Dogwood Blossoms Fall in a Parking Lot off Route 46 by August Kleisenhaller. Dogwood blossoms drift down at evening as semis pound past Phoenix Seafood and the Savern Plant west of the Turnpike, Patterson, or Hills beyond. The adulterated pearly light and bleak perfume of benzene and exhaust make this solitary tree and the last of its bloom as stirring somehow after another day at the hospital with mother and the ashen old ladies lost to TV reruns flickering overhead as that shower of peach blossoms Tufu watched fall on the riverbank from the shadows of the Jay Pavilion while ghosts and the music of yellow orioles found out the seam of him and slowly cut along it. The second poem I'll be reading today is titled The Hospital by Patrick Kavanagh. The next poem I'll be reading is titled The Hospital by Patrick Kavanagh. A year ago, I fell in love with the functional ward of a chest hospital. Square cubicles in a row, plain concrete, wash basins, an art lover's woe, not counting how the fellow in the next bed snored. But nothing whatever is by love debarred, the common and banal her heat can know. The corridor led to a stairway, and below was the inexhaustible adventure of a graveled yard. This is what love does to things. The Rialto Bridge, the main gate that was bent by a heavy lorry, the seat at the back of a shed that was a sun trap. Naming these things is the love act and its pledge, for we must record love's mystery without claptrap, snatch out of time the passion transitory. Thank you for listening to All Verse. I hope these poems inspired you to appreciate the beauty of life during this season. It's important to remember to take the time to enjoy everything that makes life worth living. For WNUR News, I'm Mengjian Markland.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Tonight, we'll see temperatures hovering around 50 degrees with a slight chance of rain. Tomorrow, expect a high of 57 degrees and a low of 49 degrees with rain and thunderstorms throughout the day, so pack your umbrellas. And on Friday, the high will be 60 degrees and the low will be 43 with some winds and some itty-bitty showers in the evening. And on Saturday, it'll be clear but a little chilly with a high of 49 and a low of 45. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Two cases of measles have been reported in the Chicago area, according to the Chicago Department of Public Health and Cook County Department of Public Health. One of the cases was detected in an adult in suburban Cook County, and another in an adult Chicago resident who recently traveled through O'Hare International Airport. A Palestinian student at Columbia University who led protests against the war in Gaza and was arrested during his citizenship interview was released today. The student, Moshe Madawi, is one of many students who have been arrested by immigration authorities since the start of the Trump presidency. The U.S. and Ukraine announced today that they have come to an economic agreement. Although details of the agreement have not been entirely released, the deal is expected to give the U.S. access to Ukrainian rare minerals and ensure continued U.S. support for Ukraine in its war with Russia. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Cara Totley, Sophia Kasa, Mika Allison, and Mumzen Mark. I'm Ilse von Heinrich. Catch our next newscast Friday, May 2nd. Now, back to scheduled programming.